Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome Eileen S., a compulsive overeater from Idaho.
Okay, I said thank you, everybody. It's wonderful to be here. Eileen S., recovered in Boise, Idaho, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm going to try to share my pictures. I try it every time. We'll see if it works. It always helps, at least for me. I did have a big weight loss, so I think it is important to share it to give other people hope. And so let's see. We will see. Take it away. Let me show you. Very exciting here. Okay. Hang on 1 second. Okay. Let me see. Can you see my screen? Can you see this picture?
Yeah, I can
Okay. So,
see the desktop.
yeah, I came into program in 2014 and I had some success, but this is me in 2018. I moved to Boise. And I was so involved with my niece and nephew that I just never said no to babysitting. And I basically did not take care of my recovery. And I got to an even higher weight. Imagine that, right? You lose weight and then you get higher. So this is me. I'm 5'3". I was 240 pounds. I came to be with these children and I couldn't play with them. I couldn't do anything because they kind of got in my way. I had some eating to do. Here I am trying to read to them. I remember being so uncomfortable, and my sister-in-law saying, they love you no matter how big you are. But I didn't love myself. I didn't love myself. That was for sure. Okay, so let's see if I can stop sharing. Stop share. Great. Okay, back to me. So this is me today. God has helped me release 100 pounds. And it's great. I'm 62. I'm healthier than I've been in my life. But the big thing is I'm not crazy like I was before. I'm not saying I don't have crazy moments, but I was crazy town. I'll tell you how I grew up. I had a nice childhood that I thought I had a nice childhood. But I knew at an early age something was wrong because everyone could get up from the table and I just wanted to stay and keep eating. They seemed to be sated and I never was sated. And so what I've learned with this disease is that I have an allergic reaction in my body, the same as some people have with alcohol. So when I eat certain foods, I mean, even they touch my tongue, my brain's already saying, can't wait to have more. Where are we going to get more? This is going to be great. Let's get some more. I'm already not satisfied. And that does not happen when I put celery in my mouth. And then the other part is that I have this disease that I have this brain that always tells me that this time when I eat, it's not going to be a big deal because I forget. I completely forget. I ignore what my body looks like. I just assume that I'm invincible. And that it's not going to happen this time. So I lived a total life of denial, just absolute denial that there was anything wrong. So as I've learned more about this disease that I have, the great thing is to find out that I'm sick because I really just thought I was bad. I just thought I was a bad person. I was a glutton. And Eileen, other people pull it together. Come on, pull it together. And it's so interesting because the people I know in OA we're such a self-reliant bunch. We're so much like, let me just try harder, let me dig in deeper. But I kept doing the same things. I did all I could. And so I don't know how you become a compulsive overeater. I mean, I pretty much feel that there was something different about me from the day I was born. I do know that I had a warped sense of my role in the world. I mean, I joke, but this was me and this was the world. I didn't understand. I really thought that you all were going to have to behave so that I could be okay. And obviously, that makes no sense because everybody else has things that they want to go their way. And so I was at this, I just was stuck in life. I just had no way to proceed. I'd make friends, they would not do what I wanted, then I would cut them off, and I was lonely. And so I ate. And it felt good for a while. It worked for a while, but it stopped working a long time ago. And as I got older, I tried alcohol and drugs and sex and I don't know, anything you can do to numb, shopping, reading, watching TV. Like, I just wanted to stop feeling because what I felt was completely uncomfortable. I didn't know how to fit in the world. I kept trying to find my little slot and there wasn't one for me. And I really thought too that looking back that I was a victim. That this was all happening to me, that people were hurting my feelings on purpose. But I am definitely like that example in the book that a lot of us read when we get to step three. I just was in your business telling you how to live your life. Meanwhile, I couldn't live mine. I'm arranging the lights, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And then the big thing is that I had my own lines in the play, but I didn't read them because I knew better how you should do your stuff. I was just laughing with a friend today because so I'm a big swimmer. I love to swim. I love the image of being staying in your lane, like stay in your lane, Eileen. And I have this image of the Olympics and they're making announcements and it's a swimming competition. They're like, wait, what's happening? Excuse me, the lady from lane two is now in lane four. She's telling those people how to swim. Oh, she's in lane six. What's going on? What's going on? I mean, that is me. And luckily today I can laugh about it and I can see that there's more work to be done with God's help. But I stepped on a lot of toes. I stepped on a lot of toes and I hurt a lot of people. And I just thought I was Miss Innocent and that it was all being done to me. So I'm so grateful for these steps. I will tell you at my worst with the food, I couldn't get from point A to B without eating. I would leave work. I'd be so relieved that work was over. And then I'd have this dread because I knew I was going to have to stop at the store and get something to eat. I couldn't make it home, which was like 15 minutes away. It didn't matter the distance. I had a lot of trouble with transitions. Life just did not flow the way I thought it should. I don't know how people stood to work near me. I worked in an office. I mean, the crackle of candy wrappers all day. I know that if I had been working with me, I would have shot me because it's just like, who do you think you're kidding? I know you're eating candy over there. Like, that's all you've been doing all day. But things got really bad when I moved here, and I took a leave of absence from my job because I thought that's the problem. The problem is my boss. I'm overworked, I'm stressed. And for me, even when everything was going wrong, I was always able to fall back on, I have a job. And then God gently showed me, because I was about to be fired, really. I was a horrible employee. I was sullen and I thought, it was all my boss's fault. I rarely didn't work. I could barely sit still. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I'd come late, I'd leave early. I mean, all these atrocious things. And so I took a leave of absence, and guess what? I ate more, and I wanted to die. I didn't necessarily want to kill myself, but I wanted to die. And I think in a way that I did. I died, like I had to kind of die to self. I had to finally ask for help. I talked to my coworkers before I left on my leave of absence and said, I can't stop eating. I mean, it's embarrassing. It felt like such a human weakness, that other people don't do that. What are you crazy? What do you mean you can't stop eating? Some people say it's so much easier maybe to take alcoholism or drug abuse more seriously. And I can see that. It isn't more serious, but there's something about food that makes us discount it a little bit and kind of say, it's all right, just go on a diet, you'll be fine. But for me, it's the same as being drugs, as being on drugs, because I was always looking for a hit. I was always looking for that sense of ease and comfort. We drink or we eat because we like the effect. And that's what I did. I liked the effect that even before I got the food, just knowing I was going to get the food, just got the dopamine or whatever going in my brain. And I'm like, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And like I said, that stopped working. So in the middle, I don't know, 2010, 2011, I moved to Colorado and I moved there for a job. And the beautiful thing about my 5 years in Colorado is that I just hit absolute bottom. I didn't know anybody there. My eating got worse. I had to study for a big exam, so I definitely did not meet many people. I was in a job that did not fit me. I had taken it purely for the money. And that's where I found OA. I just finally ate and ate and ate and ate and ate until I knew that nothing, like it was never going to be enough. It's never going to be enough. So my step one, totally powerless over food, could see that my life is unmanageable. I didn't want to see that. I didn't really want to see that. I wanted to say, I have a car, I have a house, I have a job, I'm good. But all my family relationships, all my friendships, they were all suffering. Step two came to believe. I had always believed in God. I didn't know that I was supposed to rely upon God. I didn't view God in that manner. I viewed God as sitting on a chair in the sky. He loved me, but he's very busy and he's got a lot to do. And I was raised Catholic and I've got a lot of Irish Catholics in my family. And it's just kind of funny because they're very into the saints. And if you lose something, you have to go to Saint Anthony. Like you can't go to God because he's too busy. And so it's funny though, now I can laugh about it. I mean, God is so big. I don't know what God is, but that God was not big enough for me, that was for sure. That he had to delegate to other minions. So that I was willing to believe because I'm a big fan of nature, so I don't have any problems when I'm out of doors seeing God, seeing whatever that is. I didn't create any of this. I didn't make any of this happen. You look at the intricacies on a bird, their feathers. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. So I have no doubt that there's something bigger. I just didn't know that that something bigger really cared about me or my food or my daily issues. I just really thought I was supposed to be self-sufficient, that that's what adults do. You pull it together and you get it done. And especially in the United States, and then you push. You push. If you're not going to get it, just push. I just thought that's what you were supposed to do as an adult. I was supposed to get more. I was supposed to be the best, all that stuff. Step three was really interesting, turning my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, because I got really nervous here because I did take it seriously. And I thought, well, I want to make that promise, but what if I fail? How can I make that promise? I'm not perfect. I don't know. And somebody had said, and people differ on this, but for me, it helped. They said, are you willing to continue? Are you willing to do the rest of the steps? Can you see that now you cannot do it on your own? And we're asking you to give up the car keys. And I said, yeah, I'm so miserable. Why not? Why not? And I'm like many people, when I heard the mention of step eight and nine, I was like, oh my God, I can never do that. But I did have wonderful people in program who said, stay in the step that you're in. More will be revealed. I had nowhere else to go. I had nowhere else to go. And thank you, God, because I can see why people have a hard time getting it, because you have to be completely out of ideas. And so I did step four. Heard some great things about, it doesn't have to be perfect, just get it done. I'm going to have the rest of my life to do the steps. The main thing was just being honest. You know if there's something on your heart. You know if you don't want to tell somebody. And a beautiful thing happened during my fifth step was that at the very end, my sponsor said, "Is there anything that you've never told anybody that you want to say?" And oh my God, it came flying out of my mouth. The thing that I was going to tell you all this stuff, but not that one thing that I had made so big in my mind. Because I don't know if you have a mind like mine, but I'm always creating scenarios. I'm always thinking, I know. I know what you think about me and all that stuff. I mean, it's insanity. It's insanity. Step five was really changed my life. It really did. Just to be able to say the things out loud that I did, I stole, I cheated, I lied. I was promiscuous. I slept with somebody's husband. I did all these things that are horrible. But in the end, I'm sorry for them and I made amends. And I don't have to be horrible. I don't have to be the things that I did, and I don't have to be the thoughts that I think. Six and seven, I'll admit, the first time in round, I didn't really get it. It's very brief. Later on, when I did the steps, I did have a bigger, deeper experience with step six and seven because I understood that I can't remove my character defects. But what I learned later on is that I can start practicing the opposite behavior as if they've been removed. I can be honest and true and a good friend while God and I work together, continuing my growth, and he at his leisure and when it seems appropriate will remove what God wants to remove. And I find too, the longer I'm in program and something pops up, you're like, oh, I thought that was gone. But it serves a purpose. Number one, it tells me you still need this program. Please don't walk away. You're never going to be cured because this ego wants to say, you're doing great and we're done. And then seven and eight has been very powerful. At first it was so powerful because I couldn't believe the reception I got. People were just, you're so brave. This is amazing. But to just for me to be able to call an old boss and say, I stole from you. I padded my time card. I didn't submit insurance claims when I worked for you. Like I did bad things. And this person was just like, oh, Eileen, everybody does stuff in their life. And he didn't necessarily let me off the hook as much as just to realize, like, welcome to the human race. Welcome to the human race. And the 12 steps is what a beautiful way to live, to be able to move forward. I can walk down the street now and I'm not hiding from anybody, I'm not hiding from that girl in seventh grade that I was mean to, Or the guy that I had a date with and I never showed and I pretended that I forgot, stuff like that. It's a beautiful thing. I did have experiences with step eight where people were not happy to hear from me, and they were really powerful. They were really powerful experiences. One got me really shaken, and I called my sponsor right after. And she's like, it's uncomfortable, isn't it? Knowing that somebody does not like you. She said, but you're not going to die. You're not going to die. And so really, I highly recommend 8 and 9. And then 10. So my first go round, I didn't really get any further than 9. My sponsor, that's all she had gotten to. And so it was kind of blind leading the blind. And we're like, we're good. Just get a sponsee. And all that other stuff sounded like a lot of extra work that I didn't really want to do. But step 10 was a game changer for me. Step 10 is keeping everything clean on a daily basis. And if I ever say to you, I don't get resentful, I am lying. I am lying. And I love that I thought resentful meant that I was angry, but it can mean anything. I'm a lake, I'm a placid lake. And then when the waves come up and things are disturbing and my boat's rocking, I've got to do a 10 step. I was lucky enough through a series of events to get on a train. I didn't want to join the train, but I made myself join the train because I wanted to become comfortable with 10 steps. I wanted them to become second nature, and I wanted to have the confidence that I could do them anywhere on the fly. And it was a beautiful experience. I met people all around the world, and I got to get really good at just doing a 10 step, cleaning my side of the street. I've heard many people do it different ways. I believe that the ultimate goal of this program is sanity. So I don't do one every 2 seconds. I just don't have that kind of bandwidth, but I do pause during the day, and if something comes up, I write it down. And then I do 10 steps throughout the day. But usually a lot of times I do one a day, and that's why I stay on a train. It helps me because some days you want to go, there's nothing, but I can usually find something. And if not, we have the opportunity to do gratitudes as well. But the 10 steps to me are during the day, what's bothering me, get it off my chest, and then move on and help somebody else. Step 11, prayer and meditation. Meditation has been something that's been with me since I came into the program in 2014. I can't believe that I can say to you that I've been doing something pretty much every day for 11 years. I mean, as an addict, I'm a big quitter. I like to start things and then stop them. And that doesn't have to be my way of life anymore. And prayer was harder for me. Being raised Catholic, I had a lot of prayers that I knew that were rote, and I didn't really feel them in my heart. I do love the OA prayers, and I've just gotten a lot of encouragement from people in the rooms to just talk to God, just say, hi, this is what's going on. This is the way I feel. And a lot of times I break down in tears, or we have a good laugh. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm all for spiritual literature. But for me, and what I recommend to my sponsees too, that this life is very busy. So if nothing else, I need to sit and be quiet and do nothing, even for 5 minutes, 3 minutes. That's where I started when I began, 3 minutes. Because we do want to do. We want to get stuff done. I get a hit off my to-do list. I do. It's sad. I can make anything compulsive. So what I try to do, I sit and I'm quiet. And sometimes it's amazing to see how disconnected I am from my feelings, because I'll just sit and be quiet and thinking everything's great, and tears will just run down my face. I'll be shocked. And it just is showing me again, it can hurt. When in doubt, do less. When in doubt, sit down, close your eyes, just be still. I'm afraid some days to live in the moment. I really am. It's like, I don't want to be bored. So I've got to keep moving. I don't want to be uncomfortable. But then the days all smear together. And then one day I find myself irritable, restless, discontented, and I don't know why. It's like, because I'm being invited to live a slower life, a life of more clarity, a life of being genuine. And not to sound like it's boring, but before I'd run around and I just it that you know what they say about being a human being instead of a human doing. It's very uncomfortable. And God, I've just learned more than anything, I lust for comfort. Like, I'm one of those people, like, let's go out. And I want to grab stuff before we go out. And then the soon thing, I'm taking like the refrigerator and the kitchen sink. And it's like, you just go for a walk around the block. But I want to make sure I have every angle covered. And that for me is not really living my best life. I love step 12. I can tell you that there's very few people that I have made it through to step 12 with. I've realized that whether it's I have somebody for months, for a day, or just one phone call, that I'm willing, and that's what God asks of me, and that I try my best to do service when asked, and I try not to get caught up in the idea of how many sponsees recover, because really, I have nothing to do with it, whether they recover or not. And my job is to be kind and loving. I am just part of the stones on their path. And it's very good for me because it's very humbling. Because at the beginning, I really thought that I was going to get you well. And boy, your ego, when you get to that spot, you're in angst over your sponsees, you get into conflict, they're not doing what you want them to do. And today I'm much more relaxed about it. I want them to get it, but I can't want it more than they do. I can't. It's deadly for me. And what I want is the connection, because I'll be totally honest. I mean, when I sponsor, it's for my benefit as well. It's an integral part of my program. So I want to be in the big book. I want to be doing the work. And if they don't, then I need to let them go. I need to let them go and be free and do their thing. So the 12th step has brought me many 10th steps, and many 10th steps have made me mature. And I do love when people say, if I make you upset, you should thank me, because you're going to grow spiritually and do a 10th step on me. And I see we're coming up on 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yes, thank you so much, Catherine. I have to just tell you all that the first time I was at a meeting and did 30 minutes share, I was like, I can't talk that long. And guess what? I can. Here I go. I just keep talking. But I'm really glad I'm here. I love this group. I remember I was here a couple years ago, and one of my dear friends is in this room, and I just love the fellowship of this program. I just love that I'm not alone anymore. I have real friends, whether I see them in person or not. I have people that I can talk to. I was so lonely for so many years, and I always thought that it was going to be a man that was going to fix it. And those poor men to put so much on them. Like, nobody's capable of that. And I think I was looking for a knight in shining armor, and really, that's my higher power. My higher power, who I really connected with through my fellows. I would love to say that I sit down to pray, and the light comes down from heaven on me, and we just have this incredible dialogue. But really, I have that with fellows on the phone. I really do. I've met some people in person. It's so fun to finally be myself. I mean, all those years of faking it, and I like what you like, and now I don't like you, and this and that. And should I say that, or will I offend them? And of course, I'm not going out to offend anybody, but I'm just being me. And I can be me without stepping on your toes. I can just be like, okay, you can be you, and I can be me. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I should say, except that if there's any newcomers, please keep coming back. My first meeting was on, I think it was the eighth tradition. I had no idea what they were talking about. The ice cream man was circling the block. But I knew I had nowhere else to go. And I'm happy to say that these days. I don't have to go out there and try these drugs that are for weight loss and all that stuff. And the weight loss is fantastic. And I used to wonder, though, at the beginning, what will it be like when I don't have weight to lose? It won't be exciting. But that is wrong. It is so exciting, I think, to each day learn how I can be a better neighbor, a better daughter, a better sister, how I can be content and happy with my own company, and that I don't have to drag some poor guy around saying, you should make me happy. And that I can have fun and be silly, because I love to be silly. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Eileen. That was awesome.